everyone. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, we all crave those shortcuts to understanding, especially when it comes to complex topics, right?
Absolutely.
And today, well, let's just say we're tackling some of the biggest concepts out there. Those last things, as they're often called. The eternal state, to be precise.
Eternal state, yeah.
No easy stuff, but hey, that's what we're here for. Think of this deep dive as your express lane to grasping these heavy theological ideas, specifically eternal punishment and the new heaven and new earth.
Right to the heart of it.
We're working with some fascinating lecture material today. It really digs deep into biblical interpretation.
A lot of careful unpacking of what these ideas mean, why they matter, and how we arrive at those conclusions.
Okay, so let's jump right in. Eternal punishment. Let's start there.
Heavy stuff, right?
It is. And our source material is very clear that this is not some temporary thing. This is the final destination.
No coming back.
And it emphasizes, I thought this was really interesting, how the Bible presents God as the master of hell.
Yeah, that's a striking image.
Yeah.
Really sets the stage for understanding what's at stake here.
Absolutely. And when it comes to understanding this ultimate reality, the lecture highlights five key images. It uses these sort of pictures from the New Testament to describe hell.
Yeah, it's really painting a vivid picture.
Darkness, separation, fire. Then there's this crying and gnashing of teeth, which is a phrase we always hear.
Such a haunting image.
It is. And then ultimately, death and destruction. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I just want to address, you know, there's so many ideas about salvation out there, but our lecture material takes a very clear stance. It pretty much shuts down the concepts of universalism, that idea that everyone, no matter what, will be saved.
Yeah, it addresses that head on.
And also the idea that there might be a second chance after death. Like, okay, well, if I don't get it right this time, maybe.
Maybe I'll have another shot.
Maybe there's another shot. But this is very clear. It points to Jesus' own words in John 8, where he talks about the consequence of dying in sin.
Very clear warning.
And then there's Hebrews 9.27.
Yeah, it is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment. No do-overs.
So that kind of lays the groundwork. And the lecture then brings up this, well, it's kind of a hot topic in evangelical circles. It's this whole concept of annihilationism. Some people call it conditionalism.
Right. It's this idea that hell is about complete destruction, the end of existence,
yep.
That there's nothing beyond that.
And the lecture kind of acknowledges that this view, I think, a lot of times it comes from, you know, people really struggling with this idea of eternal suffering. It just doesn't sit well.
It's hard to reconcile with a loving God, isn't it?
It is. It's tough. But the material we're working with is very clear about the principle of sola scriptura, you know, scripture alone as the ultimate authority.
Our feelings matter, for
right?
Sure. But ultimately, we have to go back to what the Bible teaches.
Back to the text. So let's look closer at some of these pictures, these images of hell that we were talking about. And one that I always find really striking is this outer darkness.
Ooh.
Especially as it's used in the parable of the wedding feast in Matthew 22:13.
Yeah, that's a powerful one.
So help us understand that. What's the core meaning, the insight there?
Well, think about it. A wedding feast. You know, it's all about joy. It's about celebration, fellowship. It's about intimacy. And especially, you know, intimacy with God.
Yeah, there's that closeness, that sense of belonging.
Exactly. So when we talk about outer darkness, it's not just being left out in the literal dark. It's this complete separation, this desolation of being cut off from all that, from God's presence, from his love, from his joy.
So it's the absence of all those good things that the feast represents. It's like the opposite.
It's the anti-feast. It's rejection.
And that's really chilling when you think about it that way.
Mm.
So our lecture then turns to what Paul has to say in 2 Thessalonians 1, specifically around verse 5, I think it starts.
Oh, yeah. That's a dense passage.
It is. So break that down for us. What's the essence of his message about eternal punishment?
Well, the central point there is God's righteous judgment. He's not just being harsh. Paul emphasizes that this is a response to the suffering that people have inflicted, especially on God's people.
It's a consequence of actions.
Yeah, and then he uses that striking phrase, eternal destruction, away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his might.
Okay, and this phrase, away from the presence of the Lord, the lecture clarifies that this doesn't mean that God is literally absent from hell, right?
No, not in the sense of not being there at all.
Ah.
The point is, for those in that state, it's the absence of God's grace, his mercy, his fellowship. It's being cut off from all the blessings that come with being in a relationship with him.
It's like you're in a room and there's a light switch. And when it's flipped off, the switch is still there, right?
Right.
It's not like the switch disappears.
But the light is gone.
The light is gone. That's a great way to put it. Okay, so another really dominant image that comes up when we're talking about hell is fire. And we mentioned annihilationists earlier. They often interpret this fire as something that consumes and ultimately leads to non-existence, that you're completely gone. How does our source material handle this view?
Well, it directly challenges that idea by pointing to some very specific scriptures. For example, Matthew 25.41. It talks about an eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels.
And angels don't just cease to exist, right?
Not according to scripture. And then you have Revelation 20.10, which is very clear about the devil, the beast, and the false prophet. It says they'll be tormented day and night forever and ever.
Tormented. That's an important word there.
Exactly. Not obliterated, not consumed, but actively experiencing torment and for eternity.
That doesn't sound like annihilation to me.
And then Revelation 14.10-11, I think that's another one that's cited, really doubles down on this point. It talks about torment with fire and sulfur, smoke rising forever and ever, no rest. That's the key.
Yeah.
The smoke never stops. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Something's burning. And if it's burning forever, well, it can't be annihilated.
Right. You don't get smoke from something that's been totally consumed. Okay, now I have to ask about this phrase that always gives me chills. We see it so much in the New Testament. It's weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Yeah, it's definitely not a happy image, is it?
Not at all. So does the lecture address whether we should interpret this literally? Like, will there be actual teeth grinding in hell?
It does. It suggests that while these are obviously very powerful images intended to convey the very real suffering and pain of hell, they might not always be meant to be taken literally. You know, kind of like in Matthew 24.51, where it talks about a servant being cut in pieces.
Yeah, that's a bit gruesome.
Right. So the question is, do we really think people will be literally dismembered in hell? The point is, God uses these strong, sometimes metaphorical images to communicate a truth that is difficult to grasp.
So it's more about the impact, the emotional weight of the imagery conveying a deeper truth.
Exactly. The emotional weight is meant to capture the reality of hell, even if the specific images are figurative.
That makes sense. It's about communicating the gravity of the situation. So finally, the lecturer grapples with how we should understand these words, punishment, death, and destruction, when talking about the eternal state. And, you know, annihilationists often focus on destruction, the Greek word apollosis, as meaning complete obliteration. So how does our source material approach these terms?
The lecturer really hammers home the point that throughout the Bible, death consistently signifies separation, not the end of existence.
Like with Adam and Eve, their spiritual death wasn't that they stopped existing.
Exactly. It was their separation from God. And then physical death, well, that's the separation of the body and soul. So when we talk about eternal death, it's this eternal separation from God and everything good that comes with them.
And what about that word destruction, apollosis?
The lecture specifically tackles the annihilationist interpretation using Revelation. So you have Revelation 17.8 and 11, which talk about the destruction of the beast, right? But then contrast that with Revelation 19.2 and 20.6. These passages show the beast and the false prophet being thrown into the lake of fire, and later the devil joins them, and they're tormented forever.
So even after their destruction, they're still there, still experiencing something.
Exactly. They didn't vanish. They didn't just stop existing, which strongly suggests that apollosis doesn't always or even primarily mean total annihilation. It's more about the state of ruin of judgment, but not necessarily non-existence.
Okay, so that really unpacks the source material's perspective on eternal punishment. Quite a sobering topic, honestly.
Definitely heavy stuff.
But let's turn now to the other side of this equation, to this idea of the new heaven and new earth. And I think it's really interesting that the lecture introduces this as a resurrected, holistic existence.
Not just our souls floating around somewhere.
Not just some disembodied state. This is about the whole person, body and soul, in a renewed creation.
The whole shebang. It's a really hopeful picture after what we've been discussing.
It is. It is. And, you know, one of the really interesting things that the lecture points out is this idea of both continuity and discontinuity. Like, there are connections between our current existence and what's to come.
We're not starting from complete scratch.
Right. And it points to Isaiah 65.67, where God says, "I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered." But there's also this sense of something entirely new, something beyond what we can even imagine. And I know some interpretations, like the premillennialist view, understand this passage as talking about a separate earthly kingdom before the final new creation.
A thousand-year reign of Christ on earth.
Right. But our source material focuses on the Revelation 21 understanding, you know, that final ultimate state.
The real deal, the ultimate fulfillment.
The ultimate fulfillment. And the lecture brings in Isaiah 66:2-24, which talks about the new heavens and the new earth enduring before the Lord. But it also includes this kind of disturbing image of the dead bodies of rebels with unquenchable fire and undying worms. And it's interesting because Jesus himself references this in Mark.
Yeah, that's a pretty stark reminder that even in the midst of this glorious new creation, there's still that other reality, that separation.
So it really pushes back against the idea that everyone will ultimately be saved or that those who aren't just cease to exist.
It's a reminder of the consequences.
It is. And I love how the lecture brings in all these different pieces of scripture. Like, it also mentions Jesus talking about the new world or regeneration in Matthew 19:28. And then Peter in Acts 3:21 talks about the restoration of all things.
Yeah, it's like all these threads weaving together, pointing toward this incredible future reality, this renewal.
And the lecture really emphasizes Romans 8:22-2 as kind of a key passage for understanding this whole transition to the new creation. What's the core message of that text? Help us unpack it.
Okay, so the really profound insight here is that this isn't just about us getting saved individually. It's about a cosmic redemption. It's about the entire created order being renewed. And the passage describes how the creation itself was subjected to futility, to decay, because of humanity's sin. And now it's waiting, it's longing for this liberation.
It's like it's groaning, waiting to be set free.
Exactly. Groaning like a woman in labor, it says. Longing for that moment when God's children are revealed in their full glory. Because when that happens, creation itself will be transformed, will be set free from this bondage to decay.
So it's all connected. Our redemption is tied to the redemption of the cosmos. And then the lecture asks this really interesting question. It's like, okay, so how's this going to happen? Is God going to destroy the current heavens and earth and just start fresh? Or is he going to transform what's already there? What's the perspective offered in this material?
It definitely leans towards the transformation view. It uses this phrase, deep pore cleansing, to describe what's going to happen, drawing on commentaries by Schreiner and Moo on 2 Peter 3.
So not just wiping the slate clean and starting over.
More like a radical purification, a refining process.
Yeah.
Like taking something that's been tarnished and burning away all the impurities.
And there's definitely some fiery language in 2 Peter 3, verses 7 and 10, 13. It talks about the heavens and earth being reserved for fire and being burned up. That sounds pretty destructive. So how does the transformation view make sense of that?
Well, the lecture highlights Doug Moo's interpretation. And he suggests that this idea of the earth being found or exposed implies that it's being reduced to its basic elements, like, you know, refining gold. You burn away all the impurities, but you're left with this pure substance.
So the fire is seen as a purifying agent, not just a destructive one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's preparing the way for that promise in 2 Peter 3.13, new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells.
That image of refining is really helpful, I think, for understanding this. It's not just about destruction. It's about transformation. And then the lecture touches on this really interesting detail in Revelation 21.1, the vision of a new heaven and a new earth. But then it says the sea was no more. Why is that significant?
Well, the lecture explains how the sea, in both the Old and New Testaments, often carries this symbolic meaning. It represents those turbulent, threatening forces, you know, like chaos, danger, separation, all those things we associate with stormy seas.
So by saying the sea is no more, it's suggesting that in the new creation, all that will be gone.
Exactly. No more chaos, no more separation, no more fear or uncertainty. And while the sea here is symbolic, the lecture emphasizes that the new heaven and new earth are very much a literal reality.
So it's not just some ethereal spiritual realm. This is a tangible physical place,
right?
A renewed creation. So as we wrap up, I think it would be helpful to just get to the heart of it. What is the core, the defining characteristic of this new heaven and new earth? What makes it so glorious?
The lecture concludes by saying that at the very heart of it all is God's presence with his people. You know, as described in Revelation 21.34, this is the ultimate fulfillment of the covenant promise. No more tears, no more pain, no more death, just perfect, unbroken communion with God.
So we've covered a lot of ground today. We've really dug deep into this source material's perspective on both eternal punishment, you know, that reality of separation from God, the torment, but also this incredible promise of a new creation, a new heaven and new earth, a place where God himself dwells with his people in perfect peace. And it's important to remember, as our source material emphasized, that these are complex theological topics, lots of different interpretations out there, and we focus specifically on the understanding presented in these lecture notes. But with that being said, I think this leaves us with a lot to ponder.
It really does. I think the question we all have to grapple with is, how does understanding these last things, both the sobering truth about eternal separation from God and the incredible hope of a new creation, how does that shape how we view our lives right now? How does it affect our actions today?
What does it mean for us knowing that this is where things are ultimately headed? Big questions, but definitely worth wrestling with.
Absolutely. Food for thought for sure.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.